describe Mrs. Meeker. What do you say to that?
Well, I think the question here is who could afford what in the good old days?
Ah,
very good.
Oh,
yes.
Now, that's not... All right, yes, all right, define it. Yes,
it's up to you.
All right, in the Elizabethan era, which is farther back than we're going, but to put it to... He was making extreme examples.
Oh, W.J. will go right back.
All
he'll
right.
be back
he'll
in
go,
the Roman days.
He'll go way, way back. I read somewhere recently that it cost a shoemaker 3 days' labor in Queen Elizabeth's time to earn a shirt, and one whole day's labor for a pound of beef.
Now this.
That's
right.
The statement made by
yes.
Mrs. Meeker.
Produce your statistics.
Well,
W.J. Brown.
I will refer you to the historian who records the happy record of those days. Mutton, £3 a penny.
Yes, but what was the daily wage?
I come to that, but I can't deal with the with two kings at once. Not even two women at once. £3 of mutton for a penny. £4 of beef for a penny. A fat capon tuppence. One pig, fourpence. Strong ale, a penny a gallon. Light ale, a halfpenny a gallon. And the best wine in Britain at a shilling a gallon. Now you ask, what for the wages? For the unskilled worker, fourpence halfpenny a day on the average.
No.
For the skilled worker, fivepence halfpenny a day. And if you can tell me a modern Briton who can buy one pig with one day's labour as a farmer, I'd like to meet him.
I don't think that those were the statistics I saw, but well, I'm going to get the other on
these are taken from proof.
Well, I think the answer really is choose your historian.
Yes,
you can prove anything.
Perfect.
But there's a point I'd like to raise. Question Master May put a cat among the pigeons, and such pigeons too. What about the absence or presence of pain? In the old days, it seems to me, looking back in the past, bellows of pain reached us from anywhere up to the 19th century. Now, the new defenders of the past, what are you to say about that?
Well, in order to avoid that, we now pass our days in a state of permanent coma.
There is this idea, isn't it, of licensing doctors to murder us. That's coming up, euthanasia. I'm told people are more interested in euthanasia now than they are in politics. I'm not surprised. But pain, surely there's nothing wrong with pain. It's the most awful thing to have. But I didn't know it was evil. Is it theologically evil, pain?
No. Mrs. Hamilton?
I'm afraid, you know, that the gentlemen of this party, I return to the charge against them. They're going individualists. What happens to others interests them much. But, Mr. Question Master, if I might, I'd want to go back to the cost of living just because there's an atmosphere of basic unreality about much of this discussion.
Or beer and a penny a gallon.
Trouble for our listeners. The real cause of the cost of living is so high is, of course, the effect that we've had during what we are now calling the good or bad new times. We've had two wars. And I don't think we ought to go on with this discussion without just reminding listeners that we haven't here forgotten the terrible circumstances which overarch our present period, and that Mrs. Meeker and I, in defending the good new days, are not oblivious of the perils and dangers that threaten us at present, but we're leaving that expressly out, and you, I hope, are doing the same, not because we don't think of it, we think of it incessantly, but because for the purpose of this argument, we are assuming the war is out, the threats of war are out, and that we are comparing situations in a time of peace. Now, the awful trouble about the cost of living, I think, is that it registers the other circumstances. But pain, I think the chairman there has raised a real point. The elimination of unnecessary pain is surely one of the points on which our times are much better, certainly much better than the Elizabethan or Edward VI, or even the times when Florence Nightingale was coping in the Crimea.
It seems to me that the more we make pain, invent things that will lessen pain, the more frightful the pains we invent from which we may suffer. You get war, for instance, now is not a matter of private armies fighting and stopping when the sun goes down, but mass destruction, far more frightening, destruction of masses of people. I think it is. A rather more profound topic than even Mrs. Hamilton's made it out to be.
Well, isn't this... May I...
You may indeed.
isn't this really that we are, insofar as we are suffering, we're suffering from the price of opportunity. Now, it's quite true what you have both said, and as people said, when the ordinary man and woman was taught to read, the argument against their being taught to read was that they would, in fact, read such rubbish. And, of course, that's a stage, but you must go through the stage of reading rubbish in order to practice your reading. In the same way, horrible as some of the discoveries of science and fearful as their price, we must go through the period of tools we don't know how to use in order to acquire the knowledge how to use them in an advantageous way for everyone's benefit.
It might be relevant, you know, to inquire why it was that we had two wars in our generation. May not that derive from the circumstance that our political methods are inferior to what they were in the past? Might they not derive from the fact that instead of being governed by one king with some sense, we are now governed by 625 members of Parliament whose primary concern is to play up to the electorate and therefore to refrain from proposing anything unpopular, however necessary it may be. This is not a criticism of the past, this is a stricture upon the present.
Mr. Brown, I think I ought to remind you that the American colonies have already won their independence.
Yes, but I'd like to get this defined, which king and which...
Well, of course, I favour King Edward VI when the price of beer was a penny a gallon.
Yes, but I still say the wages weren't as high as you said they were.
Well, Mr. Froude is against you.
Ah, we're back to the authority of the historians. So may I throw another cat or whatever you do throw among the pigeons? What about leisure in the past and leisure in the present?
Oh.
Mrs. Meeker.
Oh, dear.
Too much in the present?
Yes, I'd like to answer somebody else. Please take it.
Well, all right, Mr. Benjamin, you're eager to answer. Away you go.
Mrs. Meeker said a little while ago, you know, about one day's labour in Elizabeth's time. You only got your halfpenny or something. But this is the whole point. One day's labour in Queen Elizabeth's time was probably very enjoyable. Supposing you made cartwheels or something. You really did something that you enjoyed, a craft. You didn't sit in some awful factory eating, drinking Coca-Cola or whatever it was, and turning a handle and living just to hear music while you work. You actually worked and enjoyed working. You were living a full life. And that doesn't need leisure. That is leisure. Work is leisure in the ideal civilization. In those glorious days before 1914, and they go on, which I could do for hours, rhapsodizing of those peaceful times before the wretched motor cars came into existence. And aeroplanes.
Mrs. Hamilton.
Those glorious days were, incidentally, the days in which the Industrial Revolution was working out its horrid purposes.
No, that came
when the
king
great numbers of your fellow countrymen were not enjoying either their leisure or their work at all.
Oh.
I must say, I think an awful lot of the defenders of the past, it reminds me of the story about Punch. Somebody said, oh, Punch isn't as good as it used to be. To which the answer is, it never was.
Mrs. Meeker.
Well, yes, I wanted to refute a little bit of this glorious golden dream of the happy craftsman. You know, if you get a real, really elegant piece of furniture, 100 or 50 or 75 years ago, really well made, who are some of the great Chippendale, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a man who made a complete Chippendale desk and let it go out saying, this is the product of my hands. You had a lot of different people who made a little bit of that.
Oh, yes,
desk.
That's quite true, yes.
Well, now, what is the advantage of making a thing, a leg of a desk with a machine, or making it, and I've seen craftsmen in other countries who still make things by hand, making it with very skillfully, perhaps with four or five chops of a I'm sorry. I am not a craftsman myself.
Well,
yes.
Hatchet. Yes,
and then passing it on to somebody else to finish.
Well, I would rather do that, wouldn't you, than wait for it to come along on a belt and give it a push. I'd rather use my hands and make one leg a little different from the next. In fact, what makes that Chippendale thing you were talking about look nice is because it's made by hand and isn't exactly the same as some other thing of the same design of the same date.
No, I disagree, because I'd much rather send it by on a conveyor belt for 8 hours and then have 2 hours to myself.
To listen to the wireless.
No, all right,
we give Mr. W.J. Brown the answer on that
one. I'm not going to have the Industrial Revolution thrust onto the good old times. The Industrial Revolution came with the invention of the steam engine and the subordination of the kings to the politicians. And I very much prefer the prince and the peasant to the modern setup of the politician and the pandar. As regards the how to make furniture, handcraft was better than the turning machine. The turning machine is better than the conveyor belt, which brings me to the conclusion that I've long since reached philosophically that in my lifetime, and probably throughout the lifetime of the ages, all change has been for the worse.
We've just got time for a final quick whip round, and the question I'm going to put to you all in turn is, all right, if you love the good old days, what days would you like to have lived in? Mr. Betjeman.
I should like to have lived when everybody believed they were created by God and were humble and enjoyed doing what they could do and didn't try and do things they couldn't do.
All right, and your date?
Up to 1914, I should think. Certainly up to 1800.
Mrs. Meeker.
Well, I'll turn it around and say, I think in that case I should like to live perhaps 10 or 15 or 20 years from now when we reach that millennium again.
Mrs. Hamilton?
Well, I'm not prepared to go back in the past because I'm going to sit here defending what my eminent male colleagues, without knowing it, are attacking, and that is democracy. I think the processes by which more people have more access to the really fascinating things in life, the enjoyment of the arts and so on, that is worth the price it costs. If I had to go back, I should live in the age of Pericles when people were concerned in making beauty together. But I'd rather live now because there is hope now, and not hope for me only, but hope for everyone.
And Mr. W.J. Brown?
I stand by Edward the VI when strong ale was a penny a gallon.
Well, there you have it. We haven't decided whether the good old days were the best or the present day, but anyhow, that's the whole pleasure of talking in a London Forum.
You've been listening to a discussion in the weekly series London Forum, recorded in the studio of the British Broadcasting Corporation. The speakers were Mrs. Mary Agnes Hamilton, Mrs. Olivia Meeker, W.J. Brown, and John Betjeman. The chairman was Winford Vaughan Thomas. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.